This podcast is brought to you by Aviation Safety Magazine, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention.
Welcome to this issue of this episode of Aviation Safety Magazine's Safety Cast. I'm Jeb Burnside, editor-in-chief of Aviation Safety Magazine. With me today is Mike Friedman. Mike is a CFI, a Bonanza owner and pilot, and also, full disclosure, a longtime friend of mine. Mike, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Jeb. I'm happy to be here.
You had an event several years ago that resulted in your putting an airplane on an interstate highway, I believe. Tell me about that.
Well, I did, and frankly, it's what prompted me to buy the Bonanza. It was a club. It was a club airplane, and actually, private owner, but he had a bunch of people flying it, and it turned out to have been a maintenance issue during the engine rebuild. I don't remember precisely what they did wrong at this point, but I was flying and had a pushrod tube pop off and spray oil all over the hot exhaust manifold.
This was a Comanche?
Yeah, it was a Piper Comanche 250.
250, okay.
I was IFR in the clouds going from Manassas up to Syracuse and headed out over Pennsylvania. And the routing was up to Lancaster and then turned north.
Yeah.
And I don't remember the airway numbers at this point. But I had asked for permission to cut the corner and to intercept the north-south airway, and they gave me that permission. And this is before GPS and Loran, so this was just, pick a heading, fly it until...
Fly a heading to intercept the airway, yeah.
Exactly. And so I knew where I was, but I didn't know where I was.
Right.
Something I've since learned is far more important. and as I'm cruising along there, all of a sudden, my tack started to vary by a couple hundred RPM up and down, and the engine was surging. Oil pressure was still good. There was nothing on oil temp. I assumed that I had a fuel problem. Uh-huh. So I went mixture rich, switched tanks, boost pump on, did all that. It made no difference.
Yeah.
At that point, I called center and said that I had a problem and wanted the nearest airport.
And here's that ATC recording. So why didn't you declare an emergency at this point?
Well, I didn't declare an emergency because the engine was still running. I didn't have any sense that it was not going to continue to run. And back then, I didn't know better. You know, emergency was a big deal, or at least I thought. And it wasn't that I was afraid of the consequences, but just a little bit of too much macho, I think.
Okay.
So I said, no, not at this time. Of course, my wife was sitting next to me and screaming, yes, yes, yes. But, circumstances went from bad to worse shortly after that. So.
And let's listen to that excerpt from the ATC tape.
We got a fire alarm, boy.
1-8 Papa, I understand you have a fire alarm, boy. 1-8 Papa, you have a fire alarm, boy, sir.
Okay, and I was at 7, and when I told him I was descending, his answer is that he had opposite direction traffic at 6.
Right, right.
All right, 1-8 Papa, roger, you're holding a heading of 030? Roger, sir, I'll have a descent plan for your show. We have traffic at 12 o'clock, so you're about 12 miles opposite direction at 6,000.
Okay, we're at 6.1 now, let's go.
1-8 Papa, say your altitude now.
6,000.
Are you at 6,000, sir?
That's affirmative. Passing through 5.9 now.
Roger, passing through 5.9. Roger, report leaving 5,000, please, sir.
All right, we'll call you.
you know, he clearly didn't get it. Whether he thought I was a twin Comanche or what, I don't know. But he clearly didn't catch that. And I mean, as I listened to the tape, I frankly am amazed that I sounded as calm as I did and collected as I did.
Let's talk about the actual road landing. When did you realize and commit yourself to landing on a highway as opposed to an airport?
Well, I popped out of the clouds probably about 1,500 feet above the ground, saw the highway, the interstate. It was a little bit off to, I think it was a little bit off to my left, and I saw that in the distance it curved to the left, and I do remember saying to my wife, you know, we don't have the altitude to get over there and see what that is and then do something else. I said, that's a highway. I know what it is. That's where we're going.
Right.
And that's when I made the commitment.
So it was kind of the lesser of the evils.
Well, it really was not so much that as a question of the only alternative.
Yeah.
There's nothing out there other than woods. And, you know, this is Pennsylvania coal mining country. And that was the only thing that looked like a place to put an airplane.
Mm-hmm. What time of day was this?
So, it was late morning.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Late morning. Okay. Traffic, according to the police afterwards, was moderate, although I couldn't confirm that for you. Mm-hmm. Once I decided that that's where I was going, I slowed the airplane up, put the gear down, put the flaps out. I decided I will land with traffic, because as long as I'm faster than the car that I go over and slower than the car in front of me, I just need essentially the same amount of room you need as a car, like if you're doing a lane change.
Sure.
And so I don't need a huge gap. So I remember thinking that. So I turned with the northbound traffic. As I was coming down, I was thinking, okay, it's a two-lane highway, divided highway. It was an interstate, but there's only two lanes each way. Okay, use the white line, the lane divider, as a center line. And then I remember having to make a S-turn to go around a big green exit sign that said Frackville on it. I can tell you it says Frackville because that's imprinted in my mind. Anyway, I went over the top of the car, landed, and I do remember thinking, okay, don't touch the brakes.
Huh.
If I touch the brakes, I'm going to slow down faster than the person behind me is going to realize it, because I've got no brake lights and they'll hit me. So just let it roll.
Yeah, yeah. That makes sense.
And I did. And I let it roll, and we came to a stop. And there was somebody flying overhead in an Aztec who was nice enough to relay that we were down and all that and closed it out. And we get out of the airplane, and it's a little bit humorous, black humor, but humorous. And the people behind us come running up, and they say, first words to my wife were, oh, this is the second time an airplane's landed on the highway in front of us. And she says, what happened to them? They go, oh, they died, which was just what you need at that point.
Right, right. What about law enforcement? What happened with the actual act of landing on the road? Did anyone get their nose out of shape?
Yes, they did, actually. Oh. First thing I did after I got the thing shut down is I pushed the airplane off onto the shoulder. You know, I backed it up 90 degrees so that the wings were over the shoulder and pushed the tail off to the back.
Okay.
So I wasn't blocking either lane. So traffic was free to roll. Helicopter came over, police helicopter came over, and then the police car showed up. They were not happy to see us. This wasn't, thank God you're all right. This was, you have ruined my day.
Oh, man.
If the airplane had still been out on the highway, I'm sure they would have given me a ticket for obstructing traffic. They wanted me to go with them back to the barracks and wait for the FAA to arrive.
Uh-huh.
They would not let my wife go with them because somebody had to stay with the dog, which they would not let into the police car.
Uh-huh.
No water for the dog, And this was summer, I think, but they wouldn't. Yeah, so they were miserable about it.
Yeah,
I said, FAA is not coming.
Yeah.
Said, the FAA is not going to come. I said, there's no accident. There's no incident. There's no damage to the airplane, to the people. As far as they're concerned, it's over.
Yeah.
No. The FAA is coming. You have to be back at the barracks. I said, I'll go with you, but no one's coming. And I spent the next 3 hours standing around the police barracks waiting for people who I knew were not coming.
This was Pennsylvania State Patrol?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Finally, they took me back out to the airplane because they wanted to get the airplane out of the way to a place where they could hide it, basically. This is almost more entertaining than the landing part.
Right.
So they decide they're going to tow the airplane. So they take a rope and put it around the nose gear and tie it to the ball hitch behind the police car.
Oh, great.
So I'm going to sit in the airplane and steer while they're going to tow the airplane.
Tow it
well,
where?
Just up the road to a place where they found where it'll fit in the median and be hidden by trees.
Okay.
So they start off down the road, and instead of driving at 5 or 10 miles an hour, they get up to 35 miles an hour or so.
Oh, man.
So I'm sitting here in the airplane, and it's getting light, and it's starting to hop and skip around a bit, and I'm thinking, I can't step on the brakes because the only thing that will happen is they'll rip the nose gear out.
Right.
I can't slow the car down. I have no way of talking to them. So I'm more or less hanging on for dear life, you know, it's like a sled being towed by a car on a kid's sled. I'm just at their mercy here. Payback came when we got up to a bridge because the wings were a little bit too low for the guardrails.
Ah.
So the cops had to get out and get underneath the airplane and lift it up on the oleo struts using their backs to lift the airplane up to get the extra 3 inches of clearance, and then walk the airplane across the bridge.
Oh, I wish I had video of that.
Yeah. You know, I'm trying to make it a little bit on the humorous side here. Really, I mean, their job was not to take care of us. Their job was to make sure that traffic flowed.
Right.
And to make sure, and they wanted the airplane in a place where cars driving by were not going to stare at it and were not going to be the cause of rubbernecking accidents. And there was one crash while we were waiting to do all this stuff. Yeah, somebody slammed into somebody in front by looking at the airplane.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, that is their job. And they don't know the airplane. And it's probably my fault for not briefing them ahead of time that they needed to keep the speed down. And there's a lot of things I know now that I would do, but, you know, I'm 20 years older and been flying for 20 years and thought about this a lot since. They don't know airplanes.
Yeah.
They don't have the expertise to deal with it. They were just trying to get me someplace where I was going to be off the road and not be a nuisance to the traffic.
Right.
And the whole bit about standing around waiting for the FAA, They don't know they're not coming.
Yeah, they don't get that.
And there's no real interface. There's no procedures they have for who to call. And it took a while for the word to filter down. Mm-hmm. And I really don't mean to be disparaging about them, but you know, there's humorous aspects of it.
Sure.
In the telling.
We're almost out of time. Two quick questions for you. First of all, how did you get the airplane out of there? How did you get it to a shop to get it repaired? Secondly, would you do it again?
I'll answer the second one first. Take your question. I mean, would I land on the highway again if I needed to?
Right, exactly.
And the answer is absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you that far more focused in that kind of a situation than you can imagine. I only had a couple of feet clearance on either, I forget what the measurement is now, on either side of the wingtip, because it turns out where I landed is where they blasted the highway out in a mountain.
Oh, yeah.
And there were rock walls on either side.
Oh, yeah.
So in looking at that space now, when I've driven through it, I'd say there's no way I'd put an airplane in here. Mm-hmm. At the time, I don't remember seeing the rock wall. Jeez. All I remember seeing is, you know, I remember the decision to land. I remember the S-turn around the green exit sign that says Frackville. And I remember, you know, wanting the center line and not using the brakes, but that's about it.
Yeah.
As to what we did to get the airplane out, the mechanic came down from, I just lost the name of the airport.
Hazleton?
Yeah, Hazleton. Okay. And he was going to take the airplane apart, but what he determined was that it had just been a push rod that had come out. So they repaired it, put the push rod back in. There was still a quart and a half of oil left in the engine, so I hadn't done any damage. And then they wanted to close off the highway and have me fly it out. And I said, no.
Yeah.
I said, I got it in. Somebody else can get it out.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you ever fly that airplane again?
I did for a short time. But I honestly can say I never had confidence in it again.
Yeah.
And there were other indications after that it wasn't being maintained the way I wanted. And so I just decided, that's it. Yeah. I want my own airplane. I want to know how it's maintained. I want to be the one who flies it. And I've been happy with that decision ever since.
Yeah, there you go. Well, Mike, thank you very much for sharing this all with us.
Hey, Jeb.
Yeah.
Jeb, since that time, I've had occasion to declare emergency two other times.
Uh-huh.
And I will tell you that I learned from that. The first time was going into headed north, and I had a little bit of a smell of smoke. Okay. I was fairly certain I knew what it was because I cleaned a bird's nest out before flight, and I thought there were a couple of pieces of straw left that were just burning.
Mm-hmm.
But my wife again wanted to land. I said, okay, and I called Baltimore at the time and told them that I had a smell of smoke and I was declaring an emergency and I wanted to land. And she was, well, why did you declare an emergency? And I said, because if it's something that we need to land, then it's an emergency.
Right.
And so I got my head around that again.
Yeah.
The second time was a case of my just hypersensitivity to smoke, smell of smoke. I was just IFR flying over the mountains going west of the Appalachians. And turns out that I flew over a forest fire area and picked up the smell of smoke and couldn't identify it. So I declared an emergency, just wanted to go down. And once I popped out of the clouds and saw what it was, apologized to center and continued on my way.
Yeah.
But the point I want to make is that there were no repercussions from declaring either of those emergencies following. You know, I disrupted all the airliner traffic going into Baltimore. They were happy to have me on the ground. It was no problem. The only thing that resulted from it is I wrote a thank you letter to the guys in approach who, no paperwork, no nothing. Mm-hmm. And I regret that I didn't declare an emergency outright because I might have gotten the controller's attention on my first one.
Mike, thank you very much. Mike Friedman, talking about his engine out episode in a Comanche and landing on an interstate in Pennsylvania. I'm Jeb Burnside, Editor-in-Chief of Aviation Safety Magazine. Thanks for listening.
This podcast has been brought to you by Aviation Safety Magazine. For more on aviation safety, log on to www.aviationsafetymagazine.com.